ओम ज्ञान निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन श्रीवाहनाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. And continue discussing qualities of Krishna. We're discussing dhritiman, or one who is fully satisfied in his desires, or he is peaceful when there is cause for agitation.
When we think of causes for agitation for the mind, we generally think of unpleasant things. But the mind is also agitated by pleasant things. Dukeshvanut vignamana sukeshu vigata spriha. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna mentions a person, stitadhi muni ruchati. It's the same word as used, stitta. He's fixed. When not disturbed by distress, and when there's opportunity for enjoying himself, he doesn't become excited. Yogis go to remote places where there's little opportunity for agitation of the mind, either by distress or by happiness, which means away from people. Impersonalists don't like to relate with people because people cause happiness and distress, which are causes of agitation for the mind. Sukesha vigata spriha vitaraga bhaya krodha. This agitation of the mind manifests as attachment, fear, and anger. But Krishna is an example of a person who is very active in the world and with people, but he remains peaceful. An example given by Rupa Goswami is that Krishna was repeatedly rebuked by Shishupal, and in the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice, Krishna was also blasphemed by Shishupal there. But then others came to Krishna's defense and said, no, Krishna is very good. Krishna was praised by the munis present. So if someone is blamed by others, he becomes upset. And if one is praised by others, he becomes elated. People, they do so much activity just to get praised by others. Much of the endeavor of the whole of human society is simply for praise, for the sake of praise. Just like, why do people train for months and years to try to win an Olympic gold medal? So they will be praised and recognized by others. A man can live in a simple house, but if he gets enough money, he builds a big house. He doesn't need such a big house. He doesn't even use most of it most of the time. But so that others will recognize him as, oh, great person. So people like to be praised. People want to be rich. They want to be rich so that they can show themselves to be better than others, and then be praised. And people don't like to be blamed, reproached, or censured by others. But Krishna, in the assembly at the Rajasuya Yagya, he was blamed by Shishupal wrongly and praised by the munis rightly. But Krishna showed no sign of being agitated by the blame of Shishupal or elated by the praise of his devotees. Now, prior to this, one of the qualities of Krishna has been discussed as inscrutability. So Krishna, there was no sign of any feeling in him at the while being simultaneously blamed and praised. But this was not an instance of inscrutability or concealment of feeling. But it was rather that Krishna, he wasn't affected at all. So there was an absence of feeling. So that's the difference between inscrutability and steadiness of mind. Someone's mind may be very agitated by various feelings, but they hide it. They may smile at you although they're feeling angry with you. But actually, although it's possible to hide one's feelings by smiling when feeling upset, if one who is very expert at detecting the feelings of others, they will see by the eyes. It's very difficult to change the expression of the eyes.
So we'll go on to the next quality. Again, many of these qualities, they're similar, they overlap.
So the next quality mentioned is samaha, or impartial, it's another kind of steadiness in mind. So this word we find in Bhagavad Gita repeatedly, sukha, dukkha, one who is steady in both happiness and distress. And here samaha means one who is free of both attraction and disgust toward people. So it means he's impartial, unprejudiced. It's said of a king, he should be so impartial toward his citizens that he will reward his enemy for something good done and punish his own son if the son does something wrong. So this word sama comes in Bhagavad Gita to describe Krishna. Krishna describes himself, his impartiality toward everyone. What's that verse? Begins with the word sama. Samoham sarvabhuteshu namedveshu stinapriyaha. Krishna says, I'm neutral. I treat everyone equally. I neither hate anyone nor am partial to anyone. This is... he doesn't see who is my enemy and who is my son, because ontologically all living beings have the same relationship with Krishna. But he sees who is acting properly and who is not acting properly. So why is someone sent to hell and someone is sent to heaven? Because all living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. But Krishna acts for the benefit of all. Krishna, he says, Samoham sarvabhuteshu namedvesho stinapriyaha. I am impartial. But then he says, Yebajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. But I reciprocate positively with my devotee, because the devotee is properly situated, and the non-devotee is acting wrongly. But Krishna doesn't actually see anyone as his enemy. Because no one is Krishna's enemy. It's not that there's a permanent putana or anyone who takes that role of hatred for Krishna again and again and again. Krishna rectifies the sinful because he's thinking of the benefit of all. So, vadanyaha, generous, magnanimous, the next quality. Vedanya means a sense of profuse philanthropy. One who has the tendency just to give to others, even without considering his own interest. Most philanthropists are interested in being praised as philanthropists. When a person becomes very rich and they've already purchased for themselves several houses and many cars and a few helicopters and a few other things like that, then they want to start a charitable trust. And they bought everything they wanted for their physical convenience, and now they want to buy a good name as a charitable person. But the true philanthropical nature is one who wants to benefit others simply out of the goodness of his heart. One who attempts to benefit others without advertising himself for doing so is an actual philanthropist of proper consciousness. Such a person is called a Dhanavir, or a hero of charity. So Krishna is known as Vadanya, or magnanimous. And there's someone else who's known as Mahavadanya. Mahavadanya, Mahavadanya. Maybe in Russian it becomes like
Mahavadanya.
Yeah, and we offer respects to him. Namo Mahavadanyaya. Krishna Prema Pradayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Nami Bharata Vishe Namaha. That other person is actually Krishna himself, but he has come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he freely gives Krishna Prema, which even Krishna doesn't give very freely. Now, we've heard of the Kamadhenu, the cow who fulfills all your desires. Who had a Kamadhenu? One of the rishis?
Vasishta.
Hmm? Yeah, Vasishta. Vasishta. And we've heard of the desire tree, the Kalpa Vriksha, which fulfills all desires. And there's also the Chintamani, or the wish-fulfilling jewel. So if you get any of these, you can be very happy. You can get anything you want. When Krishna was in Dwaraka, some of the professional reciters, they sang about Krishna, that Krishna, by being present in Dwaraka, has made the Chintamani, the Kamadhenu, and the Kalpa Vriksha all useless. They've all become shamed at their lack of their uselessness. So, what is the need of a Kamadhenu when Krishna is there? All the potency of the Kamadhenu, or the Kalpa Vriksha, or the Chintamani, that comes from Krishna. And Krishna fulfills the desires of his devotees even without being asked by them. And even without them performing any particular action, or they don't have to be qualified in any other way. They simply have to be devotees of Krishna. Krishna will fulfill all their desires. To possess a Kamadhenu, that's not an ordinary thing. It's not that everyone can have one. One has to be highly qualified. But even if a person in other ways is completely disqualified, if he has the one qualification of devotion to Krishna, Krishna sees that person as most qualified. And Krishna is ready to give himself Atma Paryanto Prasad. He's willing to give mercy up to... He gives him very self, his very self to his devotee. Another example of Krishna's magnanimity in giving in charity. Every day while Krishna was in Dwaraka, Krishna would give in charity 13,084 ornamented young cows with firstborn calves. Well, that's a Shodasha Purita. It should be 84. They must have misheard the dictation, as in so many cases. The nectar of devotion is like a minefield of mistakes. So every day 13,084 ornamented young cows with firstborn calves was given away by Krishna. And Krishna was living in 16,108 palaces. And every day he would give away that number of cows and calves from each palace. What would you do with so many cows? Krishna is dharmic. Next quality. Dharmic is a very important term in Vedic literature. The whole Ramayana and Mahabharata teach, especially these two literatures, they teach us to be dharmic in how to act. Yeah, dharma is translated as religion, but it's not a very accurate translation. And actually, to precisely define dharma has been very difficult. But be a different, even within Sanskrit, to define it. Of course, we have in Bhagavatam, dharmo hitesham bhagavat pranitam, that dharma means to follow the orders of God. But what constitutes the essence of dharma, that's elusive to most. That's probably because in the worldly conception of dharma, there is an inherent contradiction. The inherent contradiction is that following dharma means to be good. So real dharma means to be a devotee of Krishna, surrender to Krishna. But dharma, as it's practiced in this world, is to gradually lead people to the understanding that they should surrender to Krishna. It's a kind of a trick process to get people to be good and then gradually be very good by surrendering to Krishna. Now, Krishna himself comes to establish dharma. It's so important in this world. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata duskritam dharma sangsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So, two of the most famous verses in Bhagavad Gita. Usually, most Hindus, or people who call themselves Hindus, they haven't got a clue about what's in Bhagavad Gita. And if any of them know anything from Bhagavad Gita, it's usually these two verses, which you can kindly give the translation of. So, but even then, they don't, even if they may know the verse, these two verses and their translations, usually the Hindus, they misunderstand it, even then. For instance, someone might quote these verses, yada yada hi dharmasya, and this is the proof that Sai Baba is Bhagavan. You see, he's making drinking water projects in Anantapur district. So this is dharma. This is the proof that he's the incarnation of God. Maybe it's not Anantapur, it's some other district. Anyway, wherever. Or they may state some statements from Shastra and then totally misunderstand and misinterpret them. For instance, they may say, "Well, God is, it's very difficult to understand God, and therefore, you can't understand that Sai Baba is Bhagavan." Anyway, that's all adharma. So we're supposed to be talking about dharma here. No, Mahabharata and Ramayana, they teach us how to be good within this world. And Rama and Yudhishthira are the by their lives, they present the ideal behavior of kings. So worldly dharma teaches us to be selfless and to act for the benefit of others according to the understanding of how this world is going on, as described in Shastra. So this understanding of dharma, it includes religion, but it's more like virtuosity. But the inherent contradiction is that everyone in this material world is here because they're envious of Krishna, and that no one can really benefit others, or even himself, unless he is free from this envy of Krishna and is surrendered to Krishna. So one who is trying to be dharmic is trying to be good while they're inherently bad. Just like that example just given of the, just now we were talking of the philanthropist. In business, they'll cheat, they'll lie, they'll steal, they'll do anything in business to make money. And when they get plenty of money, they open a charitable institution to do good to others. First of all, they cheat everyone by taking all their money, and then they open a hospital so they get free hospital treatment. Mm-hmm. It's something like this psychology. I was thinking of this psychology that they've made all these psychological treatments to help make people balanced, normal, what they call balanced normal people. First of all, they create a society which is totally crazy. Is that everyone, what they call normal is actually crazy. The way the society is set up makes you completely mad. And then they set up a department, then they set up the study of psychology to help cure people from this madness. But what they call psychologically balanced, it means to learn how to smile, put a mask on your insanity, that's all.
Yeah.
To be normal in modern society, you should be desirous of sense enjoyment. You should be cultivating all kinds of desires, of actually very base desires. And if you're able to do that in a kind of smooth and sophisticated manner, without chopping people's heads off, for instance, then you're considered normal and sane. And unbalanced means that when your lust, greed and anger get out of control to such a way that they inhibit other people's lusty, greedy and angry activities.
Cause
an obstacle to. So people who are considered unbalanced, they may have, for instance, addiction to drugs or alcohol, or they may have eating disorders. You know, that some people, they just go on eating all the time. And some people have anorexia. Or some people are compulsive gamblers, or some people, they just get angry very easily. So you can go and get psychological treatment. It's very common in the West. Even sometimes the courts will send someone who's committing crimes out of anger. They'll send him to a. He has to take a course on anger management. So they've devised all these psychological. First, they drive people crazy, and then they make their so-called psychology to make them less crazy, or less manifestly crazy. Sometimes we hear devotees say that, well, to preach effectively, we should be like normal people. But we should know that normal means insane. What's considered normal in modern society is insane. Anyway, getting back to dharma, Krishna is dharmic, he's virtuous. And dharmic means follows the principles of dharma as given in Shastra. To be good means to be good according to the principles of Shastra. There are some best-selling books published in America called Chicken Soup for the Soul. And it's all about being nice, being good and being nice. And why that title? Well, chicken soup gives the idea, it's supposed to symbolize home life and mother's love. I guess that's the reason why. So these books, I saw one in a devotee's library, so I had to flip through it to see what all this chicken soup madness was about. You know, every so often in ISKCON, you know, there's like sometimes there's Kavi madness, and then other times there's, you know, horizontal, vertical management madness, and then another time there's chicken soup madness. There's always these different things going on in Kami society which devotees get all excited about. So in the chicken soup book, it has all these true anecdotes of people being nice to others. Sentimental. Nothing to do with the soul whatsoever. All with the idea of how we should all be nice to each other and then we'll all be happy together. So of course to be nice is better than being a serial killer. But then, anyway, we're all victims of the serial killer. Time kills everyone. Krishna, in the form of time, kills everyone. Then he brings them back to life again. Grasishnu Prabhavishnu cha. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that he devours, and Prabhupada has rendered it very nicely in English, he devours and develops everyone. So this kind of, you know, treacly, sentimental, do good for others, that is not dharma. This kind of Mother Teresa, do good for others. You find, you send people out to look for dying people on the street, and then they've lived on the street all their life, and then when they're dying, she takes them to her home. And if they recover in her home, they throw her out on the, they get thrown back on the street again. Come back when you're dying. And raise huge amounts of money in the West for helping dying people. So this mundane welfare work is at best useless. The king who punishes sinners is dharmic. In modern society, all over the world, it's considered capital punishment is very bad. And there are people making campaigns to stop capital punishment. I think it's still quite prominent in Russia, is it?
It's banned for many years.
Oh, is it?
I mean, capital punishment.
Oh.
Yeah, because due to... In America, it's...
It's still going on.
Yeah.
In some states. So, there you go. I'm a victim of propaganda. So, but the king or the state who fails to administer capital punishment to murderers and other people who deserve it, they are sinful. Now, that doesn't mean that devotees have to take it in their own hands and start administering capital punishment. Don't do that. Sometimes devotees get the idea, well, Krishna killed the demons, so we should too. Don't do that. But Krishna did. For Krishna to do so is dharmic. For us to do so under the present circumstances is not dharmic. So dharmic, what is the meaning of dharmic? Of virtue. Virtuosity. Dharma, it means to follow the principles of dharma given in Shastra. So these are taught to us, particularly in Mahabharata and Ramayana, again. But especially in Mahabharata, it's full of what is called dharma sankat, or a dilemma in what's the proper thing to do. Because life is, it's there. You see, there are rules in the books. You shouldn't lie, you shouldn't steal, you shouldn't murder, and so on. So these are pretty much self-evident principles. But the enactment of them can be difficult to understand because life is complex. What should you do, for instance, if your mother is dying and needs an expensive medicine which you can't afford to cure her? It's the only thing that will save her. Should you steal it? Or a person is in intense pain and they're going to die slowly over 6 months. Should you give them an injection and stop their suffering by stopping their life? So to understand the intricacies of dharma, it's quite complex. One who understands these principles, one who knows them, understands them, follows them, and engages others in doing so, is called dharmic or a virtuous person. Oh, here's interesting example given in the Nectar of Devotion. That Krishna, the whole of the Vedic society is based on dharma, and dharma is when the marriage, they get married and then they have sex. It says the marriage is like made complete. I just can't remember the word now. So, anyway, dharma is the complete enactment of that is in performing sacrifices, public sacrifices. So it said that Krishna performed so many sacrifices that the demigods were constantly coming to the sacrifices. So Narad jokingly said to Krishna that, you see, the wives of the demigods are feeling such separation from their husbands because they're always with Krishna performing sacrifices, that the wives of the demigods are praying for Buddha to appear. Because Buddha stops all the sacrifice. So that's an example of how Krishna is dharmic by performing many sacrifices. That's an important point of a dharmic person. Hare Krishna!
Hare Krishna!
Time for prasadam. You're talking about dharma is translated as religion. Well, sometimes we hear that the Krishna Conscious Movement is the kitchen religion. It may be difficult to understand all this philosophy and difficult to understand why people are dressing in a different style, saying all these funny words. But food is good. Whatever else you may say about the Krishna Conscious Movement, you've got to admit, food is good. Any opinions about this? What do you think, Bhagwan Pandit? You're a very wise person. You've studied the Shastras very deeply. So can you give us the Siddhanta about samosas? Oop, that wasn't a very good throw, was it? All right, let's try again. All right, tell us. We have to give your learned opinion about the samosa. First you have to taste it.